start up here, I think, and work our way down.
We're here today on Sleeve Bay in North County Monaghan, and it's a blanket bog, and we're here to record one of our Heritage at the Heart podcast episodes. I have a great group of experts with me today, Paddy Sherry, Paul Sherlock and Dermot Branigan. And we're going to talk about the bog and why it's so wonderful, the threats that are facing the bog, and maybe what we're trying to do to try to protect it and look after it. And of course it's raining, because it's always raining in Sleeve Bay, because it's a blanket bog and it needs that rain. So what we're looking at here is, if you weren't familiar with this landscape, you'd look at it and think maybe it's a treeless landscape. It might look all the same. It's kind of rolling plateau. But then you can see that there's a distinct coloration, different colors of plants and heather and mosses and different activities that have taken here in the past. So, Paddy, you're from up here, aren't you? So you're very familiar with Sleeve Bay.
Yeah, we're here today. We're up at what they call locally the Big Rock.
Yeah.
And it's on the northern side, we're just north of the Penal Cross. And what we'll be looking at, the back road, as they talk about. And the quarry is just in here on my right here. And it would have been used for, they would have quarried stone. I remember my father talking many, many years ago, quarrying stone out of the Big Rock.
Yeah.
And the lane we just over here on our left hand side, that takes you on head out. And you actually cross the border on the other side of the hill.
Yeah, of course.
So we're very close into County Tyrone. And even if you look at the hill, the far hill over there, we're looking into County Tyrone. So we are. So we're very close here to the border, so we are. And another thing, we have Dermot and Paul here. This area up here was burnt last year.
Yeah.
So it was. There was an extensive fire up here last year. And it's starting to recover.
Yes, let's walk up to it. We'll
a little bit.
So we're walking up to the area that was burned last year. And Paul, that was in the protected area, wasn't it?
The burned area was in the special protected area of Sleeve Bay. So it occurred July of last year. So about 15 hectares of blanket bog was burned. So considerable damage. But as you can see now, it's actually starting to regrow and recover, which is great to see just a year on.
And would that be because it probably didn't burn too deeply? It was burning, what do we call those, 1 hour fuels, Dermot? Now, Dermot's our chief fire officer, so he knows all about fire.
Yeah, I think one of the benefits probably of the collaboration that's gone on this last number of years is the fact that we could get out as quickly as possible. We sort of were more familiar with the area. We could set ourselves up and maybe try to get the fire out as quickly as possible. I think that's one of the key learning points that we've had over this last number of years about the extent of collaboration with regard to Sleeve Bay and that work.
And that collaboration was sort of what we were trying to do, was to get a fire management plan done for the whole mountain, so for the 12,000 hectares, so across border with the Northern Fire Services and the Monaghan Fire Services, and of course the CAN project, which Paul works for here in Monaghan County Council, and with the local community as well, to try and build in the knowledge of the historic fires that have happened, the topography of the area, the direction the wind blows, and what kind of fuel load we have on. So whether we've got 1 hour fuel loads, 10 hour fuel loads, all these very, and I never learned as much about fire in my life, Dermot. It's a very complicated area.
Well, it is actually, and you're after hitting on the three main components of it, like, because we're here today and it's very windy and it's blowing at us. But you can imagine when the temperature goes up and the wind is blowing, and it only takes a small ignition source to really start to push the fire on. And like, I mean, we were very fortunate during the summer in terms of the way the weather worked on our favour. But if we get a very certainly a windy period where increased temperatures, which we've had in recent times, and you've seen what happened in London midsummer as well, where they weren't prepared for it, and so at least we've made that level of preparation. It allows us to get out here as quickly as possible and to be able to put out the fire. But again, we're looking, the undulation of the bog itself sort of affects how we actually would attempt to put out the fire. But what we can say, it is relatively flat in terms of Monaghan, which actually helps us in terms of being able to put the fire out.
Yeah, of course, because if for every bit of slope increase, the fire can take speed, can't
absolutely.
It, Paul?
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
what did it say? What did the experts tell us? It was
the total slope, any slope areas, that's kind of where the fire could take off and increase. So, luckily enough, the fire last year was on a mainly flat ground, so it helped in that kind of way.
Yeah.
Because we don't want the fire. I mean, I'm often thinking, I remember the time about maybe 8 years ago, I went to the fire station to look at the equipment that people use to put out fires on a bog, and because I had no idea what you use, and I went in to look at the equipment. There's these huge big shovels, massive shovels that you have to lug across the bog and start beating out the vegetation, and I just thought, oh my god, can you imagine 30 degrees heat, maybe temperature wise
absolutely, yeah, it's fairly rudimentary now, you
yeah
know,
and walking across the bog,
heavy
which is
fire
hard.
Kit at the time, I'm sure,
yeah,
which thankfully we've improved on that, we've got more now overalls that would be a lot lighter, we've got our helmets wouldn't be the same rigor, it doesn't need the same rigor if you're going into a building, so thanks to the programme we've been able to acquire helmets as well, but we've also used compressed air foam systems to try to suppress the fire as quickly as possible. That all helps us, but I think one of the other components is our familiarisation with the topography, with the area, getting in as quickly as possible, identifying areas where we can road networks, where we can set up water sources, and all of that there has sort of fed into the importance of being able to put the fire out as quickly as possible.
I think that's key, the knowledge just of the area,
the knowledge of the
more
area,
knowledge you have.
And Paul, to be honest, and Paddy's, the collaboration we mentioned earlier with regard to the landowners, because that's key, because like invariably we don't need to be coming up here for every small fire. If somebody can come along and put the fire out as quickly as possible and it's clear that, and they understand that, but when it's needed, get us out, and once we're out we can come out and be able to put out the fire as quickly as possible.
So Paul, when you're looking at the landscape here and we're thinking about the wildlife and the biodiversity, you know, importance of this site, you know, what impact would fire have on maybe the species that we're trying to protect up here, or the you know, the habitats?
Yeah, well, I suppose Slieve Bay, for example, as a blanket bog, is a key habitat for many red-listed species such as the hen harrier, red grouse. So when the area is burned up here, obviously their numbers would decline. So blanket bogs are very important for these species' habitats. They're also a great source of carbon. So it's a natural resource like forests, rivers, in terms of reducing our emissions and also storing carbon going forward.
So like when we say red listed species, we mean species that are in danger or endangered of possibly becoming threatened with extinction, isn't that right?
Yep.
So it's an important category that we're talking about. It's very significant when we say a red listed species.
I think it's key. It's key for going forward, because these species, if it keeps going the way it is, say wildfires, that kind of thing, on blanket bogs, these species will decline. And the hen harrier, for example, it's a very rare bird, and Slieve is one of the lucky places that actually has it at the minute. So I think going forward is key that we keep these species and do whatever we can to protect the habitats.
I think another thing on that, Paul, is the wildfires don't seem to have the same effect on the predators that prey on the grouse and other ground nesting birds up here, as say it doesn't have the same effect on them as it has on the grouse, the hen harrier, and that there, because they sit on the ground, they nest there, and once the fire comes, that can wipe them out. And the likes of foxes and grey crows and that, they're not really dependent on the landscape. A fox can go and burrow down under the ground, he uses his den there, the fire will just fly over him, so it won't do him any harm. Badgers are the same, and they will prey on ground nesting birds and on nests as well. So whenever you have a fire up here, you're destroying the cover for the ground nesting birds, number one. You are increasing the predators have somewhere to go, they can move out of the area, come back whenever the fire's over, and their numbers still stay the same and keep rising, where the red listed species that you mentioned there, they are losing out all the time. They're on the wrong side of the line all the time, so they are, you know, and whereas the predators, they seem to get on, life goes on for them.
I think it's interesting over the past the little collaboration that we've had over the last number of years to try and get this plan in place has been that you can see the role that like blue light services, which the fire services has in conservation, you know, and that's the kind of emergency that we're in from a biodiversity point of view, wouldn't you? Do you know what I mean, Dermot?
I couldn't agree more, Shirley. Yeah. Like, I mean, we our role, if you think about it, has to evolve to be able to match the needs that we have to retain our environment, to keep our climate in safe hands, and we have a role in that instance. In any form of a fire, you know, the extent of fire, the amount of carbon burn, the effects it can have a fire on the environment in a broader sense is significant. And thankfully, we've started to recognise the
techniques that we can bring into fighting fires of occur in a landscape like this, and that we can actually minimise the effects of it. And that's sort of that's our, in essence, that's our purpose. You know, it's broadening from saving life to saving our actual environment is probably what we're at the moment.
Yeah, which we depend on,
yeah,
of course.
Like, yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
What I mean? So, like this massive landscape here, you know, under the surface, it's like, you know, holding all that carbon, but only if the bog stays in good condition.
Yeah.
Once the bog starts, you know, being drained,
yeah,
or, you know, and becomes damaged, it starts actually releasing greenhouse gases.
And another issue you have there as well, once the fires are over and done with, and the next thing then you have maybe a wet spell of weather after that, under the amount of ash and the amount of burnt debris that's there on, it's washed into local rivers and into streams and that there, so it then starts to affect the species that's in the river, so it does, you know. And up here in Slea Bay, where we have probably maybe one of the only rivers in County Monaghan under that is of a very high quality. So
that's
it
right,
is,
the,
you
mountain
know,
water.
And the mountain water.
Yeah.
And if you start, if the quality of that there starts to deteriorate, then that's going to affect rivers and streams further down.
Yeah. And Paddy, even, you know, the unfortunately, climate change is occurring. It's taken place.
Yes.
Temperature of the earth is increasing, and as a result, our summers are invariably getting warmer.
Yes. Yes.
And the knock-on effect of that, if we don't start to have systems in place to be able to deal with it. And I'm talking about currently we're fighting generational fires of first and second generation, but
yes,
when we move into a third generational fire, you have a higher.
Now, do you want to explain to the listener what a first generation fire, second generation fire, and third generation fire is?
In a very simple terms, I mean, if a fire occurs today and we're fighting it with this climate, there's a level of control on it.
Yes.
But where you start to introduce high temperatures and then where the vegetation has been dried out and land management hasn't taken place, and so you have a substantial fuel base, you're really talking about a liftoff, an intense fire, and that darkens the cloud, and it actually affects the, you know, the neighbouring environment, the neighbours, and the air quality.
Yeah.
But as well as that, there it has a ferocious speed to it, like, you know, and you might have seen that, and I mentioned London earlier, but that's where in Spain and then in America and Australia, that you can see that intense fire. I'm sure you've seen it on the television,
yeah,
on many nights during the summer periods. But that's the sort of that's the third generation
and
fire.
That is what's predicted for climate change,
yeah,
under all of the scenarios.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
we're not meeting any of our targets, and really those scenarios around very high temperatures and intense dry periods in the summer would affect, say, the vegetation here. So the vegetation on a blanket bog holds water.
Yes.
So the sphagnum moss, in its very essence, has got lots of little barrel shaped cells which hold water, and that keeps the top of the vegetation wet.
Yeah.
But if we get prolonged drought and prolonged high temperatures, the surface area of the bog can start actually dry and become very brittle, and all of this kind of linear,
yeah,
grass you see here becomes,
yeah,
very dry. And that's what you're talking about, Dermot. So that all then can,
yeah,
exacerbate,
yeah,
the already windy windy conditions, hot conditions, drought for a period of time, and then you get a fire. It can actually cause huge damage.
There
somewhere
is
here.
Inherent protection already built into the bog.
Yes,
what
if it's in good condition.
In good condition. And climate change and poor management, actually what it does is it strips away
yeah,
that protection that has, and it allows fires. And then in particularly smouldering fires, which can be prolonged and very difficult to extinguish.
Yeah.
And that's where the challenges are. So that's getting back to the importance of
that's the only thing we can really manage,
program.
Isn't it, Paul?
Yeah.
Is,
yeah,
that the three variables on the triangle of fire, aren't there? There's three points, isn't there?
Well,
but
yes,
the only one we can manage is land management, isn't that right?
Yeah.
What are we doing here in the project?
Well, in terms of land management, we've done a few exercises. So we've done drain blocking, and we've also done invasive species removal, so self-seeding conifers. So really, with drain blocking, our main aim is basically to re-wet the bog. So there's plenty of drains from previous peat cutting over the years. So we're blocking these drains to ensure the water is staying in the bog and it's not running off the bog. So the water will come to these peat dams we put in the drains. So it'll come to these dams and it'll go adjacent each side of the drains, so other areas of the bog are getting water and are getting wet. So that leads to a reduction in fire in that area. It's used as a strategic management area. So going forward, the bog's wetter, and also it reduces then the fire risk in the area.
And as well as that, by removing the self-seeded conifers, that, you know, the seeds blow in from the adjacent plantations, and it takes about 30, well, over 30 years, you can get quite a lot of seed blown in. Like, so those as well, those actually dry out the little bit of bog that they're standing on, as well as being a place for predators to roost from. So it's really important to take them out as well. And
you also notice,
grazing.
You can even see it where we are here now. You can see a lot of the willow starting to spread out on either side there. You see the laneway there. And the willow, they love wet ground. They love it, so they thrive on it. And when you have them, I know over in Culca there, they had a program where they were trying to remove the willow to keep the bog wet.
Because the willow will absorb a lot of water.
They absorb water all the time, so they, and they love it, so they, you know. And that'll be part of the program as well, to remove anything like that there that's drying out the bog. The idea would be to remove that there, and because a wet bog is a healthy bog, another thing you find is over a period of time is you see, with the grasses that's growing here, once they die back, they just fall on the ground, and then the next year's growth comes up and they fall on the ground. It ends up like a carpet, and you don't get enough, even from a biodiversity point of view, you don't get the flowers not done that should be growing up here are struggling to get up through that grass.
It creates a mat.
And it creates like a mat, and they struggle. So therefore, whenever you have your butterflies and your insects coming out to feed on those flowers, they're coming when they should be coming, but the flowers aren't coming when the butterflies are there.
Yeah.
Because they can't get up through the grass.
So it's everything sort of out of
and
time.
And I suppose from a good point of view, the introduction of the Dexter kettle up here have made a massive...
I think so too, haven't
massive,
they?
Massive improvement.
So no surprise, it's getting very windy up here. So let's walk down the road a bit to a bit of shelter. Okay, let's go over here. It's a bit more sheltered, and we can talk about the grazing program that's in place with those Dexters. Paddy, you were mentioning them.
Dexters have been introduced, I think this is their second year up here, and it's local farmer Pat McKenna who has introduced Dexters up here, and from a biodiversity point of view, they are doing a fantastic job. So they are.
Aren't they? Because they're a particular kind of cattle, aren't they? They're like a wee short legs on them, they're not too big,
no,
they're not heavy.
They're a native Irish breed, so they are, and I'd have to thank Pat, because he sent me up a couple of steaks there a few weeks ago.
This is not sponsored by him.
They're absolutely fantastic. So they were, you know, they tasted lovely.
He told me that it was kind of marled to me, short time. He said it was going to be very tasty.
It's very tasty, very tasty. But from a biodiversity point of view, they're doing, because what they do is they break up that matted grass.
Yeah.
And they will eat that grass this time of year. And it leaves then that grass is not dying back, and it's not forming that mat that the wildflowers can grow through.
So you get a much more diverse sward, as they call it, don't you?
Whenever it comes into the springtime, into April, May time, when the weather's starting to get a bit warmer and temperatures are starting to rise, and there's less of a threat of fire because that grass is not there.
They don't have that fuel load, as they call it, isn't it?
They don't have that fuel load.
They reduce the fuel load in areas probably that's not easily got to.
That's
as well.
Yes.
So it's
exactly. Yeah.
That's true. You're not going to be able to get to it with a like one of those robo cut machines or some other kind of way of flailing it or whatever.
And very beneficial in that kind of way.
They are very beneficial in that sort of way. So yeah, and they do.
But you have to keep them at a low stocking density, don't you? On a landscape like this, you're not going to put lots of cattle out.
No. You're not going to you're not going to put 50 or 60 head of cattle out here. You know, if you had 10, maybe maximum, maybe 12, that'd be it. You know, and move them about. And the thing about the beauty with the Dexters up here, with Pat and the Dexters, is he has them all electronically collared. So he doesn't have to come up here every day to look at them. And he doesn't have to spend hours and hours looking at them. He can just pull out his phone and knows exactly where they are. You know,
it's a great use of technology.
He could nearly ring the cattle and tell them where to go to.
Yeah.
So he could, you know.
Yeah.
And But no, it's fantastic. I've seen them up here. In fact, I was up here last. I hardly ever seen a few of them up here. So
it's a great. I just think it's a really great use of technology. You know, because it allows the farmer to know his cattle are safe, and he can see them. You know, at night time where they're sleeping and everything. He can also see on his app where they've spent most of their day grazing. To do with, it's something to do with the heat. Is that right?
Yeah, heat signals on the signals. On the phone on the app as well. So and he can also, if he sees them kind of going towards river courses, lakes, that kind of thing, he can he can divert them from that. So
it's really great. So it means we can do targeted grazing without having to have a shepherd. With is that what you call it? Would it be a shepherd?
Herdsman.
A herdsperson. To be with them all day. You know, so you can do the no fence technology, and then they can graze the fuel load away. So the conservationists are happy because you're getting the biodiversity value up of the ground. The farmer is happy because he's getting an income and a niche product, probably. The fire service are happy because there's no fuel load or reduced fuel load for them. And then the water people are happy, the people who have water supply up here, because obviously you're not going to be having fire plus sediment getting into the rivers, plus more treatment for the water. And also the fisheries are happy because you're going to have plenty of, you know, you're not getting the sediment into the water course as well. So it's a real, it's one of those real win-win-win solutions to one of the issues that's up here. Now obviously there's loads of issues up here, you know, like turf cutting, etc. But at least we're starting to get somewhere with some positive actions, you know.
I think looking at the bog in its general health, you know, it's not a from a health point of view, it's not a bad place, you know, it's not a real bad place, so it's not, you know, but there is a lot of things that we can do to maintain and improve it. And I suppose one of them is looking at the heather here from a grouse conservation point of view. Some of the heather in places is very hay and very stemmy, which doesn't suit grouse. So in some cases we're going to have to look at either mulching it or controlled boring. Now I know from a payer point of view you'd be looking at that as from a different, you know, is it worth it?
Well, like, first thing I would say, Paddy, and it's good that we need to have the conversation about controlled burning, but it's a conversation that will need time, and it'll need, we'll need to nourish the benefits of it, you know, and only work on the sense where we can determine
benefits. And it's prohibited
benefits
in the north. So before we leave, I think let's think about what we find most special about the bog, I suppose. Paul, what do you find? Because you've done a lot of work up here recently.
Yeah, I suppose the last 2 years from working in the bog, I think just the habitats and the different type of species up here. Like as I mentioned earlier, the hen harrier, just valuable species that you don't really see a lot of places. I think it's important to keep their kind of heritage up in on Slieve Bay. And also I think from doing a few school tours, I think it's a nice place even for recreation. And I think education going forward is key, just so people learn more about the bog and, you know, learn the kind of facts of the bog and then why it's important to a lot of people.
I think though too, from a personal perspective, I've introduced my family to here, to this area. Even looking out today, you know, there's a unique beauty that you can see everywhere at every angle and every landscape. Tells you something that, and I suppose coming from maybe a more urban area in Monaghan, if I can call it urban, but not being up here as often, being up here more recent has allowed me to be able to understand the benefits of what we have in North Monaghan. I've also been able to use more terminologies in terms of habitat and in terms of heritage, but particularly when I go to other parts of the country and we talk about the hen harrier, and you'd be surprised the number of people actually understand that and understand the importance that we must try our very best to secure its presence in this area, and that's a measure of where we are and where we need to grow probably as a nation in some sense, that we recognise the fundamentals of what we have and make sure that we hold on tight to it. So and I love that idea, that engagement even within the fire fraternity, that we discuss it and where we can actually impact on environments like this, and allows that, and I talked about collaboration earlier, but it allows us that greater level of engagement with each other and listening. I think the discussion we had there about the Dexters is an example of that, there where they actually cut through the crust that might form and then enable the water to get through and enable life to survive. And I think that's a lovely thought and lovely for us to be able to pass on to our next generation.
Really nice, you know, isn't it? Yeah. And Paddy, I mean, you're really, now I don't want to say your age, but you've been up here a long time and you've a lot of experience dealing with the bog. So what do you find really special about it?
Every day I come up here I see something different. And I see the bog in a different light every time I come up here. There's something catches your eye. that it is, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's just...
It's the bog that keeps on giving.
There's a sort of a mystic beauty about it.
Yeah.
You know, you come up here and you see a whole lot of different things in different colours, different times of the year. You know, you come up in the springtime, you see the bog cotton. But in the summertime, you see all the lovely flowers. And you come up here now, this time of year, it looks brown, it looks desolate. But it has got that beauty about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
That haunting beauty.
Yeah.
You're coming in now to October, into Halloween. You know, what nicer park could you be?
Yeah, it has that. It has that lovely... I mean, I find it's a very poetic...
People ask me, do you ever get sick of coming up here? I said, no, you can't. Yeah. And I describe this place here as my psychiatrist's chair.
Wow. Yeah.
So it is great for the head.
Yeah.
Great for the mind. Yeah.
And that's the thing, isn't it, about biodiversity? It's one of those values in well-being and health that they're only recently really starting to talk about. Like, places like this are actually really good for your mental health and your physical health, obviously. But even the air quality up here is just lovely because we've been inside all morning and this is just so good to breathe in this beautiful fresh air. And I just think it's a great place. But I want to thank everybody who's been involved in the project. I think we need to do a lot more work up here together, and it's not always easy, like, you know, but it's so worth it. It's a landscape that's been here for thousands of years, and hopefully it'll be here the next few thousand years for our family that'll come after us and our ancestors. And will we walk on another little bit and have another little look?
Yeah, take in more.
Or a big look, even. The Heritage at the Heart podcast series is supported by the Heritage Council and Monaghan County Council.